49, 1069. I've got it. Valis is not an entity which thinks, e.g., a discorporate pure mind or a mind incorporated as our human minds are. No, it is a mind which uses all reality by which to think. So it is neither discorporate, nor does it have a body as such. This is what I saw that I initially thought of as camouflage. Valis camouflaged into our reality. Either all reality is its normal brain from the start, or it has entered our reality and is making use of it. So any picture, stick, music, book, any arrangement of motion, any linking, any sequence of motion is used to store, process, convey, create information, thoughts. I even know that it is a 0-to-1 dialectic binary system. I know that Valis does not move along spatial axes. I know that it is not dependent on the natural causal events of reality for its information, but initiates and or directs causal trains of events. I know this from seeing what I called Valis in as reality external to me. But also, I know it from its mind joining mine and my experiencing reality the way it does, e.g. its self-assembly from the stockpile around it. So there is a not it, and my great original, i.e. initial insight, was that it, one, has invaded our reality and plunders it and transmutates it, and two, camouflages itself. If Valis equals reality, then what meaning has the set ground discrimination that plays such a role in my thinking? If it equals reality, it wouldn't have to camouflage itself. Invasion and camouflage go together, and the self-assembly causes it to continually grow as it sublimates more and more of reality invisibly to us. Also, what if my anamnesis are its memories? They go back to Mycenae, and then to the stars. It uses reality as a notation system, the way a computer chip uses, e.g., bubbles for 0-to-1. Once having agreed upon an arbitrary notation system, Valis must control reality if Valis is to control the information. Now the objection to the idea that this is God is, why would God need our physical reality in order to think? Because if he cannot think without this physical brain, then he cannot have preceded creation, nor can he exist independent of it. This makes God an organism somewhat like ourselves, a psychosomatic macro entity. Creation is as essential to God as God is to creation, and God is not the creator, but the psyche of reality. This fits certain pre-Socratic ideas of God. But there is still the set ground element, visible if you have the grid, feature extraction. I think Valis is camouflaged into reality and does not equal reality, but is assimilating reality. Well, then it will equal reality. It also may very well occlude our percept systems so that we can't discriminate it. There's another aspect to its invading. It's informing me that all the centers of power have fallen to the evil power, and Valis must utilize people on the periphery. 49, 1072. Inner-outer transform, reversal. Reality used as vehicle, medium, by which to process information, observer-participant universe. Valis only controls, is, reality in a local situation, where a sentient mind, i.e. a human, perceives it. Shekinah, sporadic. Bimodal. Valis controls all reality. Valis invades and is on the periphery. In experiencing Valis, it entered my own brain, which became a universe, the missing part of the external universe. We have half the info, message, reality signal, in us, and the other half is outside us. There is no message until the two are superimposed, then reality, which is a fusion of outer and inner, can be read as coherent information. Message equals valus. Message, coherent info, only comes into existence when inner and outer are superimposed. Valus only comes into existence when the contents of my mind, my brain print, is superimposed on outer reality. I am one half of valus for valus to exist. This equation must occur, an event in which the contents of my total mind are a necessary half. My mind alone is not valus. External reality alone is not valus. If I am observer to reality, valus doesn't exist. The superimposition must occur. Together, these two halves form a higher universe than the two parts, the principle of emergence. This higher universe, which is compounded of the total contents of my mind, brain, and outer reality, is valus. It is like a vortex or crasis. It is a phenomenon that is temporary and localized. So I am valus. I am not valus. But then how can valus be said to be ubiquitous? This is an aspect which baffles normal reasoning. Valus is an interaction between a human mind and reality as a field, a new higher field created by the superimposition of the two. The self is everywhere rather than being in the human, Shankara. But also, it no longer exists. It is omnipresent and abolished, hence a sense of vast spaces. It can't move along the three spatial axes any longer. But time replaces space as an axis for, of, movement. The self is in the outer world, but unfamiliar, e.g., I became Thomas, not I. The self is everywhere. This is pure Eckhart Shankara. Valus only comes into existence when my mind is externalized and superimposed onto outer reality. Only then does the message, i.e. valus, come into existence. And it is an equation between my mind and the external world, and we are each parts, and it is a kind of vortex. Valus, where is it? It is not in the human mind that sees it. It is not in the world. It is in both, superimposed as one. It is in neither, alone. It is an event when the human mind, the self, superimposes itself in union, syzygy, with the world. Which is to say, when Atman and Brahman become another universe higher than either, either alone. Brahman alone is everywhere and underlies all objects and change, which causes the illusion of time. It is the cause of everything and every event. But it is not conscious. The self is conscious, but it is limited to one place and causes nothing. It is caused, not causing. It is subject to fate. Together, they form valus, everywhere causing everything, and conscious, and free of determinism, fate. The self now wills change, and Brahman has personality. Out of this comes the void of love, mutual love between the two, Brahman and Atman, of reunion. 49. 1081. The interaction of the two information sources, i.e., the dialectic, takes place in our, as our, universe, where the sources combine and recombine in greater and greater evolutionary complexity, but still as information. However, this information forms the basis of a new world. 49. 1082. Aspects of Spinoza's substantia. 1. Matter. 2. Mind. 3. Energy. What I saw in 374 was either a fourth aspect, material energetic information, or all of the above three combined. Physical thoughts. This would seem to confirm Spinoza's view of substantia and natura as God. Deus sive substantia sive natura. Look, a perception of the two aspects matter and mind is not mind and it is not matter. It is one third thing. There is thought involved as information. But the matter is simply not what we call matter. The whole thing resembles, well, it's physical, but what is obvious is that what we call matter is a partial view, and pure mind would be partial. We can't see it. We see mind, and matter is information-rich. Neither aspect is more fundamental than the other. It is not thinking matter, and it is not material thought. It is what it is. If I could see my brain as I think I'd see linking and relinking, a physical event for each thought. What I saw was God, and his mind was infusion with mine. Neither the concept thinking matter nor material thought is quite correct. The first suggests that we are dealing with something matter is capable of doing. It is a property of matter. The second is misleading because it suggests a vehicle for thought, as ink and paper are a vehicle for language, a way to write it down, make it physical. But in point of fact, I saw matter cease to be matter. It became something else that we have no name for, but I swear, it was no longer matter. Conversely, it was not just a physical medium for thoughts, because for one thing to repeat, it was no longer matter, no longer physical in the usual sense. So matter ceased to be matter. Okay. Did mind cease to be mind? Yes. It turned into... All I can think of is Pythagoras's special use of the term cosmos, the harmonious fitting together of the beautiful. But nonetheless, glyphs, still information. Of this, Pythagoras does not speak. I can only think of the final canto in the Commedia about the book. It was a three-dimensional structure that was, at the same time, a book. Or, like a musical score, it was a way of encoding information in a structure or as a structure. Time consisted of accretional layers, and there was no locus, lens system viewpoint. It constantly changed, became more complex, which is to say, more information-rich. Information as reality, yes. Matter turned into one vast intricate structure. That was information, and by being played, yielded up everything, viewed from every subjective viewpoint, that had ever been or ever would be. It was played by being perceived, open wide. Yes, playback came through anamnesis of it. Just seeing matter, there is no life to it, hence no sentient movement, which is the activity, which is information. We are seeing only the carrier, as in frequency. The info is missing, and mind alone has not the beauty of the geometric forms, that is, the attribute mind. Only when the two attributes, mens and natura, are perceived together does the beauty appear. Form, proportion, color, ratio, harmony, motion, shape. The thoughts must be seen for their true value, which is beauty to be discerned. Consider the information word cat and an actual cat. How beautiful is an LP of the Beethoven Ninth compared to hearing the Ninth? No wonder I thought of my experience as post-mortem. While alive, I saw the God whom we see when we die, as the French newspaper wrote. Note. Presumably, a Quaker periodical. End note. Could this be indeed the kingdom of God that Jesus spoke of, finding a way to see the other attribute of substantia? The information, mind thinking, for which matter is the carrier, medium, system? How did I do it? Did I do it? Or is it done to, for you? 49, 1089. So there is a secret within a secret. The empire is a secret, its existence, and its power that it rules, and secondly, the secret illegal Christians pitted against it. So the discovery of the secret illegal Christian instantly causes one to grasp that, if they exist illegally, something evil that is stronger is in power right here. Thus, to know Part B of the secret situation, the illegal Christians, is to instantly know by inference, relentless inference, Part A. Whereas if you knew Part A, you could not conversely deduce Part B. So Part B tells you Part A, but Part A does not disclose Part B. So Part B is the greater secret. By knowing Part B, you know the whole situation. 49, 1096, 4:30 a.m. Hypnagogic. I have bought my redemption by the price I paid in terms of suffering, i.e., the tax matter, not by the act, but by the suffering later.